alien abduction. The term has become synonymous with ufology. But where did it all start? Though paleo-abduction claims are found throughout early human history, the term alien abduction came into prominence in 1961, born from an event that would arguably completely reshape the way we viewed the notion of alien visitors from another world. This is Something Strange, and this is the abduction of Betty and Barney Hill. ...1961 was a year of massive change for America. John F. Kennedy was elected the 35th President of the United States. The Bay of Pigs invasion began, and Alan Shepard became the first American in space, to name but a few. But away from these major historical events that would be seen as important landmarks for America and the entire world, 1961 would hold a different significance for a couple living a peaceful life. A life that was about to be turned upside down. Betty and Barney Hill were a married couple living Portsmouth, New Hampshire. They were respected members of their church and community. The couple both sat on the board of the local United States Commission on Civil Rights. Being an interracial couple themselves, both Betty and Barney worked tirelessly to bring about the change in America that reflected their own close and loving relationship. Betty was a civil worker and dealt directly with state child welfare cases. Barney, on the other hand, was a World War II veteran and worked with the United States Postal Service. By all accounts, the couple were honest, hardworking, and very much appreciated and highly respected within their community. During the late summer of 1961, Barney worked a particularly hard night shift for his job at the Postal Service. The commute was 60 miles each way, and this, coupled with an already busy life outside of his job, started to boil over. The stress of those last few weeks had caught up with them both, and getting away from it all seemed like the perfect remedy to not only recharge themselves a little, but also to reconnect as a couple. The couple, who were already married for 16 months at this point, sadly never had a chance to enjoy a honeymoon together. With their beloved dog Delcy in tow, and Barney behind the wheel of his 1957 Chevrolet Bel Air, this car trip would take them through Montreal and Niagara Falls, and would serve as a honeymoon of sorts. On the final day of their trip at 10 p.m, the couple left a Vermont diner they used to grab a bite to eat before their final push home to Portsmouth. Barney figured they'd return home by 2 a.m, or perhaps 3 a.m. at the very latest. The date was September 19th. With an overcast sky breaking into a clear night, and a mere 2 mph wind outside the car, the night was mild and was perfect for that relaxing journey home after a romantic getaway. However, their night would soon take a menacing turn into something that neither of them could ever have imagined was even possible. As they drove home, Betty observed a strange light behind the car. At first she thought it was a falling star, but what particularly caught her eye is that this supposed falling star fell upwards. The couple decided to pull over and get a better look at this strange object. Grabbing a pair of binoculars Barney kept in the car at all times, Betty was the first of the couple to get a better look at this mysterious light. She observed an odd-shaped object with flashing multicolored lights. Betty couldn't understand what it could possibly be, so she passed binoculars to Barney to get his opinion. Barney then peered through the binoculars, and though he believed it to be a commercial airliner at first, he quickly changed his mind once he got a better look at the object's dramatic movements. The light ducked and weaved between trees, rapidly moved towards them, then back like a rubber ball on a paddle, and seemed to be toying with the couple. Barney, who was a keen plane watcher and had many experiences with different types of aircraft from his time serving in World War II, reassured Betty that it was only a satellite. However, in truth, Barney knew this could not be the case, and he grew more and more concerned as time went on. Barney was deeply unsettled by the bizarre and frantic movements of the object. The couple got back into the car and drove toward Franconia Notch, a mountainous stretch of road. 1 mile south of Indian Head, the couple stopped once more as the object passed over the highway and moved off into a nearby field. The area was isolated, and despite not seeing another car in quite some time, Barney, taking his gun from under the seat and placing it into his coat pocket, decided to once again attempt at getting a better look at the object. Barney exited the car, hurriedly crossed the road, and passed through the tree line towards the field where the ominous object was settled over. Betty stayed in the car with their dog Delcy, who was now cowering under Barney's seat in a tight ball. Barney fumbled his way through the trees in complete darkness, but eventually made it to a vantage point which gave him a clear look at the strange object. The object was now closer than ever, and Barney once again pulled out his binoculars and gingerly peered through his lenses. Barney claimed the object was as large as a jet, and in his own words, said it was shaped like a pancake. For Barney, a person who has never believed in aliens or UFOs, this was an earth-shattering moment. The gigantic disc hovered silently over the field. Across the entire front of the disc was a large curved window. Barney noted that instead of looking like one massive piece of glass, the curved window was separated by vertical dividers, and Barney was so close he could see inside of those windows. From his vantage point, inside the craft, Barney could make out 8 to 10 humanoid figures. They were all clad in black and had their eyes fixed directly on him as he stood in the still, dark night. The only noises that could be heard were a light breeze, his car's engine running, and his own heartbeat racing faster and faster and faster. All but one of the figures walked away from the window, to what Barney assumed to be the back of the craft. The lone figure, who according to Barney looked like a normal human male, was facing away from Barney. But as Barney looked, the lone figure looked over his shoulder and locked eyes directly onto him, smiled, and spoke. However, Barney claims the man's lips did not move, but instead he heard the voice in his head. In his own words, Barney described it as thought transference. The voice said,
"Stay there. And keep looking. Just stay there. Keep looking. Keep looking."
Barney, in an almost trance-like state, forced the binoculars from his eyes and made a break for it back to his car. Barney raced through the trees into the darkness towards the familiar sound of the engine of his Chevrolet Bel Air. Barney got back to the car in a hysterical state and tried in vain to calm himself down. He began to scream at Betty that they were going to be captured, which sent Betty into a frantic state herself. He started the car and sped off down the road, while instructing Betty to look out the window to see if the craft was in pursuit. It was. This time the craft was directly above them. It moved quickly and completely silently. Just then a strange series of beeps and sounds started to emit from the car's trunk. These strange sounds were followed by a sense of vibration that both Betty and Barney felt across their entire bodies. They both lost consciousness. Two hours later, they came to. They were 35 miles away from where the craft hovered over their car. Delcy was still under Barney's seat, still curled into a ball. In a state of utter confusion, the couple somehow continued their journey home. Once they got home, Betty and Barney tried to piece together what transpired on that lonely road, but everything was fuzzy and incomplete. Betty's dress was ripped, Barney's shoes were scuffed, the strap to the binoculars had been snapped, their watches ceased working and were fixed on a particular time, and lastly, Barney had a sense that he had somehow been physically interfered with. In the years following the strange encounter, Barney developed an ulcer and had strong bouts of anxiety, unable to let go of a deep sense of fear and dread that originated from the missing time he and Betty experienced that night. Betty was also deeply affected, as soon after the incident, she began to have disturbing and vivid dreams. Taking place over 5 consecutive nights, the dreams varied in detail, but generally focused on mysterious beings leading Betty and Barney from their car to a craft, conducting experiments on them, and eventually returning them to their car. Betty was deeply, deeply shaken by these nightmares. In a desperate attempt to regain any memories of what happened after they blacked out when the strange noises buzzed from the inside of their car, the couple returned to the stretch of road where the encounter took place. It didn't work. Still unable to account for the missing time between 10:30 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. on that eerie September night, Betty and Barney approached Benjamin Simon, a psychiatrist and neurologist who focused on a technique of hypnosis. Over the sessions Mr. Simon had with both Betty and Barney, terrifying pictures started to unfold of what transpired that night during the couple's missing time. The couple was hypnotized separately, so details of their regression would not be overheard by one another. Barney was hypnotized first. Barney's sessions were vivid, disturbing, and punctuated by strong emotional outbursts.
It's right over my right. God. What is it? And I try to maintain control so Betty cannot tell I am scared. God, I'm scared.
It's all right. You can go right on. Experience it. It will not hurt you now.
I got to get my gun.
Soon after the strange beeps could be heard from their trunk, under hypnosis, Barney recalls what happened after the couple blacked out. The car stalled, and when it came to a stop, he saw six beings standing in front of their car. The beings approached the car and ushered Betty and Barney outside. The couple complied, as if they were under some kind of spell. One being, who Barney understood was some form of authority or leader among the others, told him to close his eyes. Barney, overcome by fear, shut his eyes tightly. In fact, for most of his abduction experience, he was so utterly terrified that he could barely open his eyes at all. Though his recollection is shaky under hypnosis, Barney vividly remembers floating off the ground as the beings brought him and Betty to their ship. One recurring theme throughout Barney's two hypnosis sessions are the references to eyes. Though Barney does reference the ominous stares the craft's occupants gave him upon entering the field with his binoculars, there are also some more abstract references to eyes. Barney spoke about eyes in his brain, and, quote, "I'm not even afraid that they're not connected to a body, they're just there. They're just up close to me, pressing against my eyes," unquote. Once inside the craft, Barney was guided to a room, stripped naked, and made lay down on a table on his back. A table that he noticed wasn't long enough to accommodate his body, as his legs hung across the sides. Though Barney's hypnosis sessions didn't recapture vivid details of what examinations were done, as his eyes were closed, Barney does recall samples being taken and the beings doing tests on his genitals, skin, ears, mouth, and anus. At one point during the examination, Barney was also turned onto his front, after which he could feel hands and fingers feeling his spine, as if the beings were counting his vertebrae. The moments where Barney did open his eyes, he saw beings mumbling to each other in some strange language. Whenever Barney opened his eyes, he was promptly instructed to shut them. Whenever the beings addressed him directly, they did not move their mouths. But instead, Barney once again heard the voice in his head. Barney then recalls being led out of the craft with Betty and back to his car in a daze, only to see the craft leave. Betty's sessions were similar to Barney's in terms of what happened, though there were differences in their experiences. Firstly, Betty did not close her eyes during the entire experience, and unlike Barney, she was never instructed to do so. Furthermore, Betty claimed she underwent an additional examination, which saw a long 6-inch needle being inserted directly into her belly, which caused immense pain. The pain was eased by the so-called leader, who waved a hand across Betty's face, nullifying the pain. Betty also had a number of interactions with this leader. One of the interactions led to Betty being shown a hologram-like star chart, which was from the point of view of the being's homeworld. On this hologram map, the leader also showed Betty their trade route. Shortly after the hypnosis session, Betty, though crude, drew a star chart from memory. Betty also claimed that the leader offered her to take a book that was present on the ship home as proof of what transpired that night. However, upon leaving the craft, the leader, seemingly having a change of heart, took the book back and explained why Betty could not take it with her. The main difference between Betty's experience compared to Barney's experience was that Betty seemingly did not upset and disturb her as much as Barney's did to him. In comparison, Betty's experience was strange, otherworldly, but the being seemed to show her a kindness that was not extended to Barney. Just like Barney, Betty remembers being led back to her car in a daze and watching the beings depart in their craft. The Hills never sought publicity. However, after an investigative journalist obtained confidential interviews the Hills had done with UFO researchers, the story was blown wide open on the front page of the Boston Traveler, a newspaper published in Boston, Massachusetts. From that point onwards, the couple were thrust into the spotlight of the media, and what followed was a book they consulted on called Interrupted Journey, which was written by John G. Fuller, multiple articles, and even a movie depicting the encounter made in 1975 starring James Earl Jones and Estelle Parsons. In 1968, inspired after reading Interrupted Journey, an amateur astronomer from Ohio named Marjorie Fish attempted to use Betty's hand-drawn star chart in a bid to locate the homeworld of these beings. After painstakingly trying to discover the vantage point of the star chart, Marjorie, after ruling out many possibilities which included all non-main sequence stars, variable stars, stars of class F4 or higher, multiple star systems where the stars were too close together, and M-class red dwarfs, constructed a three-dimensional map using wires and beads. Marjorie was sure she found the vantage point of Betty's drawing, which would mark the being's homeworld. It was a planet orbiting the star of Zeta Reticuli. At the time of her research, Fish said,
"Since we did not have the data to make such a map in 1961 when Betty saw it, or in 1964 when she drew it, it could not be a hoax. Since the stars with lines to them are such of a select group, it is almost impossible that the resemblance between Betty's map and reality could be coincidental. Betty's map could only have been drawn after contact with extraterrestrials."
However, by the 1990s, when her understanding of the universe had evolved somewhat, certain leaps of logic were unearthed in Fish's three-dimensional model of Betty's star chart. And though some still hold onto it as some form of proof of the Hills' claims, it ultimately led to Fish herself effectively rejecting her own hypothesis. The tale of Betty and Barney Hill has an equal amount of believers as it does retractors. But one thing is clear. This case effectively created the term alien abduction within the modern lexicon, and fundamentally altered how humans perceived the idea of alien visitations and what their intentions might be. Barney died of a cerebral hemorrhage on February 25, 1969. He was age 46 years old. Betty always felt that the immense stress the encounter caused brought about his death. Betty spent the rest of her days as a well-known icon in the UFO community, and ultimately died of cancer on October 17, 2005. She never remarried. From the day their story of alien abduction was dragged into the public eye by journalists, despite the ridicule, despite the sneers, despite the impact their story had on them financially, the Hills, right up until their deaths, never wavered on their opinion of their experience. To them, this was absolute fact.
"Darcy is under the seat, and I reached under and touched her, and she is in a tight ball under the seat, and I sit back and I see Betty is coming down the road, and she gets into the car, and I am grinning at her, and she is grinning back at me. And we both seem so elated, and we are really happy. And I'm thinking, it isn't too bad. How funny I have no reason to fear. And we look, and I see a bright moon. And I laugh and say, well, there it goes. And I'm happy.
A shared hallucination brought on by massive amounts of stress, or perhaps a turning point in ufology history in which beings from another world decided to finally begin interacting with the anthill that they had been visiting. This has been Something Strange. Thank you for listening to Something Strange. Please consider subscribing and rating Something Strange wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to check out our website at strangepod.wordpress.com, which features a companion blog for each episode, sharing thoughts, links, videos, and sources. Please follow us on Twitter at astrangepod. That is at astrangepod. If you'd like to reach out directly for feedback, suggestions, or even a question, please email somethingstrangepod@gmail.com. Something Strange is written, edited, and presented by me, Dennis Murphy.